And Jonathan, thank you for that, Romy. Jonathan is informing that he will be late to the meeting, but he will be joining us soon. So let's start with Adrian Barnes. Don't see Adrian. Okay, Mike Barr.
Here.
Thank you. Steve Borg.
Here.
Thank you. Wei-Ling Hubert. Not yet. Okay. Jason Reinman.
Here.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton.
Here. Hi, everyone.
Dwayne. And then Nora. Is Nora with us today? I don't think so. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and get started, and we'll be reading off the meeting norms. We'll start. I will do that today. The board recognizes the importance of all stakeholder voices at OSA. Collaboration and community are essential to the viability of our school. The purpose of this meeting is for our board of directors to meet with each other and conduct school business, as well as to receive input from the school staff and the community via public comment. Public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. Comment on non-agenda items may be made at the beginning of the meeting. After hearing a report, members of the public have the opportunity to offer comments in a designated time prior to the board discussion of that agenda item. Outside of public comment, members of the public are also welcome to observe the meeting. Please use the raise hand function to make public comment. If you cannot use the raise hand function, you can sign up for public comment in the chat. We want to be sure to see all the signups, so keeping the chat clear when public comment signups are being called is appreciated. You may sign up for public comment at any time prior to the conclusion of public comment for that agenda item. You do not need to wait for public comment to be called to sign up, and may sign up for public comment during the presentation of the report or at any time prior. Public comment will be capped at 3 minutes per speaker. To be sure of hearing from a variety of people, minutes may not be transferred to other speakers. The board cannot respond to public comment on non-agenda items. This does not mean the board is not listening. Staff will do our best to respond to chat comments throughout the meeting, but may not be able to respond to every single one. To be sure your comments are heard by board members, please sign up for public comment. We strive to be a learning community that learns from each other. We are also a community comprised of people who care very deeply about the school. We recognize that all voices are not treated equally in our society, but aim to value and respect all voices equally in this forum. We may have different ideas of how to achieve goals, and we may feel passionately about our points of view. This needs to be a safe space for a variety of opinions. And finally, we address each other in a respectful manner to foster collaboration, build community, and to model good citizenship to our students. For clarification on the recording, board members and members of the public should please state their name prior to speaking, and the meeting is being recorded and the audio is posted on the school website. And a new addition to our meeting norms, I think I mentioned this at our last meeting, is that we will be doing an OSA land acknowledgement at the beginning of our full board meetings going forward. And I want to thank Melinda, Luisa de Jesus, and also Anna DeRoos for working with me over the last 2 weeks to begin to draft an OSA land acknowledgement, and I'd like to share it briefly at this time. OSA is situated on Huachin, the unceded territories of the Chochino-speaking Lhasan Ohlone peoples who have lived upon this land since the beginning of time. Indigenous peoples in California, the Americas, and around the world are still here. OSA recognizes the historic genocide and ethnic cleansing inflicted upon Indigenous peoples in California and the Americas, including their forced removal from ancestral lands and the deliberate and systemic destruction of their communities and culture. These conditions are ongoing, and Indigenous people have been fighting against cultural erasure and for their sovereignty since the beginning of colonization. To this end, we as a community strive to honor the Indigenous members of our community, uplift their voices and contributions to arts and culture, center Indigenous people's worldviews in our classrooms, and support Indigenous sovereignty everywhere. This land acknowledgement is a small act in supporting Indigenous communities and centering the justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion work within the Oakland School for the Arts. Solidarity with Indigenous nations can include donating time and money to Indigenous-led organizations, amplifying the voices of Indigenous people, leading grassroots change movements, and returning the land. Thank you all for listening to the land acknowledgement, and we'll be talking about that more as we proceed into the next school year. So with that, we'll go on to public comment. And Romy, will you call the names?
I'm not seeing anyone signed up for public comment at this time. Oh, Tracy Thomas for public comment. Thank you, Tracy.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tracy Thomas, alumni from the class of 2012. Just wanted to take this time to ask if there has been any update regarding not only seat fulfillment nominations, but as well position voting as well. I know the board is not, probably won't answer at this time, but I just wanted to bring that up as the Alumni Association has given to very valid nominees for the board chairs. And I just wanted to see, because this may or may not be the meeting before we all go off for the summer, that those positions will be fulfilled or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. No other public comment? Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Romy. So now we're moving on to the consent agenda, and we'll need, if there's any changes, our motion to approve the board minutes for from May 22nd, 2021, and also from June the 2nd, 2021. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes, or do we need, are there any additions to the minutes?
Move to approve.
Thank you.
Seconded
by Dwayne. Okay, so any discussion? No discussion, so we'll vote on the minutes. Adrian? Mike?
I wasn't here on the 22nd.
Okay, are you abstaining then, Adrian?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Mike Barr?
Yes.
Thank you. Steve?
I didn't look at them, so I'm gonna abstain.
Okay. Jonathan, I don't think you're here yet. Wei-Ling?
Yes.
Thank you. Jason?
Yes.
Okay, Dwayne?
Dwayne, yes.
Okay, thank you. And I vote yes. So I believe we've passed the minutes. Okay, great. So we don't have a student. Oh, I'm sorry, we skipped the student advisor report, but I do not believe Nora is with us this evening. Okay, so we will continue on to the next agenda item. The next agenda item is for discussion. It is a proposal to create and adopt a board equity platform. We will be bringing this back to the full board for discussion and action at our next meeting, but the board equity committee has discussed an equity platform over its last two committee meetings. We know that we have been just really deep in conversations around our JEDI work over the last few years at OSA, and very, very intently this particular year. And one of the things that the equity committee wanted to bring forward was a proposal equity model for the governance body of this organization to consider and adopt to help set an example around this equity work, but also to start to create a pathway forward in terms of implementation, and to look specifically at those areas of the organization that the board is specifically responsible for. So I want to share a logic model that was developed and approved by the equity committee this week. And then we will bring it back for our next board meeting to have a fuller conversation about this particular proposal. So if I could share my screen for a few minutes. Great. Thank you. Okay, just now I have to, find the document. Give me 1 second. Okay. Can the board members see my screen now? Yes?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right.
We can also see
that. Okay, thank you. So this is a logic model, and I just wanted to go over quickly the areas that we have been discussing in the Equity Committee along with the proposed activities outputs. We're still working on the short-term and the long-term outcomes here, but wanted to share this particular, where we are in terms of our progress. So in terms of the, yes?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I never thought I'd be this person, but can you make it larger, please?
Yes, I can. Sorry. Is that better, Adrian?
Yeah, try being red, green, colorblind too, Adrian. See how that works out.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all right.
Yes, this is better. Thank you.
We can change the colors. Yes.
Didn't okay. somebody say there's a way to like fix it on your own Zoom?
Yes.
Yes. Does anyone you know go how to do the, that? The very top bar.
Yeah.
You can adjust the size of what you're seeing.
Oh, great.
Then you got to drag it around on your own.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So
welcome to the club, Adrian.
So in terms of the specific board areas that we will be looking at and discussing, of course, governance, policy, budget, and then human resources. And we'll go just very quickly through some of these. And let's start with governance. So within that particular area, activities that the board could undertake related to governance could be establish DEI goals for board membership, review and revise the bylaws through the DEI lens, have the board consider new seats for alumni, teachers, and students, create system of stakeholder engagement through board office hours, meetings, meeting norms, and board practices. And then the specific outputs that we would expect based on those activities include multidisciplinary board membership, bylaws that state that at least 50% of the board would be people of color, adoption of revised OSA board bylaws, implementation of board office hours, board member participation in standing OSA stakeholder meetings, and meeting norms slash practices that facilitate public engagement. And then a short-term outcome would be that at least 50% of the board members are people of color. And then we would look and create the long-term outcome here that we would be accountable for as a board. And then on the policy side, the activities would include adopt the DEI goals for recruitment and retention of students, faculty, staff, and administrators of color, adopt academic and artistic goals for students that address opportunity gaps, monitor and communicate progress towards DEI goals on a timeline, establish equity task force with reporting responsibilities to the board, review, revise, and create policy through DEI lens, revise complaint process and designate independent ombudsperson. Progress or deliverables associated with these activities would be progress reports provided to board and community stakeholders on DEI goals on timeline that allows for program improvement, monthly reports from Equity Task Force, implementation of complaint process, and then new and revised board policies. And then we would pull the outcomes from our charter here to help us, you know, to help us focus on where we want to go, both short term and long term. And then on the budget area, establish equity budget earmark, establish advancement DEI goal, consider all budget expenditures through equity lens. And then the deliverables would be increase investments in DEI strategies and DEI budget allocations for 21-22, DEI advancement strategies incorporated into advancement and sustainability planning, budget approval process that includes DEI discussion and analysis. And then with the short-term goal of 15 to 20% of our budget earmarked for DEI strategies. And then we would develop the long-term outcome for that as well. And finally, in the area of human resources, review and revise as needed the anti-discrimination and ADA notices, support and allocate resources to the recruitment and retention of people of color staff, support and allocate resources to coaching for administration and staff, and then deliverables, HR policy support, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Anti-discrimination and ADA notices are robust and disseminated. Recruitment and retention strategies are funded and evaluated for effectiveness. And then we'd have short-term recruitment and retention outcome here, and then long-term outcome. And so the intention of all of this is to give the board a framework and a roadmap around our JEDI work here at OSA, and to help us really focus our efforts to move us to the next level. So this is what we wanted to present. I wanted to ask the equity committee members if they wanted to comment on this, and then open it up for the, well, let's do the public comment first, and then we'll do the board comment. So is there a public comment? I see Chris.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just want to say, wow, this is really great. This is long overdue, and I'm really happy to see this work going forward. So thank you.
Kava Menzies for public comment.
Hi, I just want to echo what Chris said. It's just incredibly thorough, and I love the actionable steps, and I love the specific systems and bodies of work and all of the implications through all of the structures for the DEI to be embedded from the board all the way through our admin, through our teachers. I think it's the only way that institutional change can happen. I definitely want to spend more time with the document, because those were all really important specific items. But I think it's a fantastic beginning to a roadmap for us to really engage in this holistically and completely as an institution. So thank you for the work that went into that.
Karen Morphin for public comment.
Yeah, I just want to echo what Kava said, but I just want to say that in order for a systematic change to happen, there had to be structural changes. And that's what this reflected, that, you know, structural shift starting from the board. So I just want to say that in the past 2 years that I've been here, this has probably been the most comprehensive few minutes that literally touched in every aspect and very part of the organization. So I really, really appreciate the document. At the same time, I know it's going to take a lot of work. So again, I just want to offer our community's help. We're here to, you know, to help the school. We're also here to serve our students. We want this equity task force and equity efforts to move forward. And I think it's been very clear, this year. So please, you know, reach out to us and let us know how we as community members can fundraise or work with advancement or work with the board to also fill those positions needed. There's many people that we know, there's people in the community. If there's any gaps on the board that you would like to fulfill, please let us know so that we can also reach out not only to the parents, but also the community at large. Thank you.
Thank you. Brad Erickson for public comment.
Brad, I think you're on mute. There you go.
Thank you. I'd like to applaud this effort to really systematically integrate JEDI strategies throughout these various dimensions of the school organization. I think that's really what needed to happen. And I think it's a reasonable and practical strategy for moving forward. And I just want to add that I just want to invite the board to collaborate with the APT on this. And if we can offer any help and support, I know we'd be happy to do that. Thank you.
I don't see any more public comment.
Okay, great. So we'll open it up to board comment.
Josefina, this is great. It needs to live within the strategic plan. So I don't know where that process is, but just want to make that comment. And in terms of the content and the flow, it'd be great to see all the pillars organized this way because it's really easy to follow.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Steve.
I agree with that. I love the layout. I love how clear it is. I do have a concern around the 15 to 20% of budget. Mm-hmm. Mike is smiling. I think you knew this was coming. How are we prepared to offset that?
Mm-hmm. I think, and we'll be talking about this in the context of the budget and the finance committee as well, is we want to really look at the whole holistic budget at OSA, because we believe that there are other equity investments that have not been clearly articulated in that way. And so part of this will be an analysis that goes along on the budget side. Jason?
I also wanted to add to what you're saying, Josefina. First of all, I agree that it's a great document, and I'm not being self-serving in saying so, because Josefina, you brought the tool to the Equity Committee, and I really think that it was a great gift for us to be able to see it more clearly. Adrian, the question that you are bringing up actually was something that we talked a bit about in the Equity Committee. And one important piece to think about is that a lot of the work that we're doing presently can and should be equity work. So it involves looking at the things that we're already doing and thinking about how those pieces can be leveraged towards equity work. What is a lot of the spending that is happening currently? Although, of course, any things that we do beyond that to enrich could also be added to that number. So I think this is going to be a living document. We're going to continue to add to it and build to it. I really appreciate the first steps, Josefina, that you took along with the Equity Committee in building this document.
Thank you, Jason. Other board comment? Okay, in terms of our process moving forward, I will share this document with everyone. We will agendize it for the next board meeting for a fuller conversation. We can, you know, really, I think, get into some of the detail here. And also we will be engaging the other community stakeholders around this particular platform. And as Jason indicated, we're looking at it as and thinking about it as a living, breathing document, and it will change over time. Hopefully, as we reach our goals, we will incorporate new goals as we move forward. So thank everybody for chiming in here and the support for this particular aspect of the work. So let's move the agenda forward, and let's go to Lisa and the Executive Director's report.
Good evening, everyone. Could we bring the deck up? Great. I know we have a hefty, robust agenda tonight, so we're going to zip through here. Here's our agenda in terms of school reporting. Next slide. So I wanted to share that despite fighting against tremendous headwinds created by the pandemic, we really ended up this academic year with many things to be really proud of. We received a number of different COVID-19 relief funding. Part of this was logistic pieces, technology, Chromebooks, hotspots, additional technology for students and staff. The work that David Smith is doing to make sure that everyone is equipped with OSA technology is huge. So a huge shout out to Mr. Smith. We had funding that was provided to the school for returning to in-person learning. And the school received a number of protocols and guidelines to follow throughout the year. This shifted as the year went on and updates were given and needed. This was all needed to be provided to the staff and the community. And I wanted to just thank Ms. Marty Cooper and Ms. Lori Cheatham, because they provided so much behind the scenes support on this. There was training staff on protocols, health protocols, changes in matrix of the classroom. We also had funding for cleaning supplies and air filters in all the rooms. The pedestrian traffic flow throughout the school was designed, and additional stipends for teachers who were teaching both in person and hybrid. The work the student support team has done this year at OSA is commendable. Mr. Oz and Ms. Zog have elevated the student support at OSA to an extremely high level. A huge shout out goes out to both of them and the entire student support team. This includes our counselors, Ms. Schultz, Ms. Snyder, and our SPED team led by Sarah Ordaz. Congratulations to everyone. They did an incredible job. We also received funding for extending learning opportunity. We're providing a summer school, 3-week summer school program that began this week. There have been salaries for intervention support, paraprofessionals in the classroom, and a salary for additional mental health counselors to assist our students during this very, very traumatic time. And then at the closure of this school year, we earned 2 enormous awards that were awarded to OSA by our state superintendent, both the California Exemplary Arts Education Award and California Distinguished Blue Ribbon School Award. Ty actually sang the national anthem at the beginning of this award ceremony, and Vocal Rush was honored because their music was playing as the scrolling of all the schools went by. So a huge, huge shout out to our entire school. Next slide, please. Our work with Candace this year really had many layers. This was the very first time OSA brought everybody, all the staff in the community together to have a year-long PD that focused on diversity, equity, inclusion. We began with the Cultural Mindfulness Institute, where we came together as a community and went through a very reflective process regarding personal beliefs and pedagogy. We shifted our focus to school systems and we designed organizational assessments around equity. And some of these overarching ideas that we talked about were curriculum, instruction, mental health, student support. Each team came up with different criteria. We divided into teams. We had our performing arts pathway folks together, our visual digital media pathway together, SPED team, middle school, high school, and each team completed equity rubrics specific to each area. These equity rubrics are now going to be folded into OSA's 3-year strategic plan that we're finalizing this summer. I love process work, so I just wanted to show a little bit of process work here. This is just sort of a sample that one of the teams had written out. You can see they were focused on curriculum from the lens of what they taught. And what we were doing was going through different levels. The level 4 is where we wanted to land so that we were starting to make real change within our curriculum. This is just one idea that came from this particular group. Next slide, please. After a year of being apart, we came together a few weeks ago for the 8th grade promotion and the senior graduation. These were 2 incredible events, and I'd be remiss if I didn't give a huge shout out to Wendy Schneider, Arlyle Schultz, and our parents who formed a graduation committee and an 8th grade promotion committee to plan these events. These were months and months and months in the making. They were just beautiful. And an 8th grader designed all of those panels, and his dad's an architect, and put the whole thing together for the backdrop. It's really great. There is a quiet moment that I witnessed during the 8th grade promotion where 2 8th grade students, one new to OSA this year, meeting the other for the first time on the last day of school. They both looked at each other at the 8th grade promotion and said, "Oh my gosh, you're taller than I thought." And then they just gave each other this huge, huge embrace. And it was quite remarkable to see them meeting for the first time on the last day. We have 2 very proud board member parents, Josefina and Dwayne, who had students that participated in both of these events. And the words to the right were spoken by Trevor Walton. He was the valedictorian of the 8th grade class. I found his speech to be so poignant. And I think it's wonderful when we can all learn from our young people. So congratulations to Trevor And congratulations to Duane. Next slide, please. This year, I learned a tremendous amount about the school, especially the inner workings of the school, the infrastructure. And I found areas that were working well and other areas that needed more support. Some initiatives that I took this year were to rebuild some systems. Organization is key. Planning is important. Teamwork and collaboration is vital. And we started to do all of that with team building, with a lot of behind the scenes work done at the school. We are writing grant proposals this year for next year's program. Some of it that it's just gotten sent off recently is all focused on JEDI work. And I also spent quite a bit of time working with our arts chairs. Matt Trevisano left at the beginning of the school year, and I stepped in to really oversee the art programming, hold weekly meetings. And I was the first person in many, many years to evaluate the arts programming. And it was just a joy to not only learn about the programming more deeply and get a much better sense of the supports needed for everyone, but to see all the accolades that were happening as well. Our sixth grade class is entering OSA through a lottery next year, and the arts chairs designed a broader scope of classes for incoming sixth graders to take next year that's going to allow the students to work in different sub-pathways within their pathway. We're redesigning some meetings and structures. We've focused on PD, and we're completing the planning of the master schedule and calendar in the spring so that we have our summer to pre-plan and plan. Designing a workflow chart as people's jobs and responsibilities shift is so important, so we know who the point person is for each and every job. And we are really hopeful to receive some additional funding next year due to the grants written this year. Next slide. All four leases were up for renewal this year. This was a 7-month process of working with a real estate attorney by reviewing and rewriting leases and negotiating the leases with the city. Our former board member, Melissa Mitrovich, found a pro bono real estate attorney. Her name is Ella Foley Gannon from Morgan Lewis. This is a wonderful company because they ask their attorneys in their company to do pro bono work for schools, for nonprofit organizations. And she's just been an incredible support to us and has saved us close to $1 million in rent expenses. So I wanted to just explain that in the past, OSA was being told that they had to pay for any kind of HVAC repair, which was crazy because that should be coming from the landlord. So in negotiations, the city is going to pay for $1 million worth of repair for both the roof and HVAC. We were able to get a 5-year lease with the first 2 years on the box with a 40% rent reduction for the first 2 years, which is wonderful. We were able to get back payments in rent due to some errors on the previous lease. And a memorandum of understanding was written with another planet who manages the Fox Theater so that we are going to be able to access the theater for some assemblies for no cost. And they also provide internships for our kids. So a lot happened over the past 7 months. The paperwork was just signed this past week. And so I wanted to share that there will be an overall result in savings of close to $2 million in the next 2 years. Newberry, very quickly, this is a building that we've been renting for many years. They were wanting to triple our rent right when our lease was about to expire. We negotiated and got it back down to what we're paying now. We did let go of suites, but we picked up Piano Fight. The benefit is that we are going to be paying a Piano Fight by the hour that we use it and not for a month lease, which will be a huge cost savings. And last week, we have been really looking at a lot of real estate, and we found a new venue that we are in the midst of negotiations on for our visual arts department. Next slide, please. Okay. this summer. So very quickly, we have a 3-week summer program. High school, it's focused on credit recovery, middle school for literacy report, support. OSA team and COSATs have selected 5 dates to do some bargaining starting next week. And so we're all very eager to try and work collectively together to bring a contract to fruition. We also, our leadership team is working through the summer to complete the strategic plan and bring that to the board and the community for final review and feedback. And then, of course, we're planning for this school year. Next slide. So it's with a very heavy heart that I share all the names of the OSA staff that will be leaving us at the end of this year. Some of them have been with us for a short time, while others have been here for about 15 years. Julie Humphrey will be the first OSA teacher who's retired from Oakland School for the Arts. And we are sending out an exit survey to all these staff members so that we can learn more about their experience at OSA and use this data to help us improve our systems at the school. I'd like to also really recognize Lori. She does so much behind the scenes work, and she is going to be leaving us at the end of this year too. And so thank you, Lori, for the work that you've done for programming and systems. She's certainly a force to be reckoned with. And thank you to each and every one of these teachers. They have just made huge, wonderful impressions on our kids. Next slide. And after quite an extraordinary year, I can only say thank you. Thank you to our teachers, our staff, our leadership, our parents, our grandparents, our families, and then of course, our students. Everyone has just done as much as they possibly can. It has been an incredibly challenging year. And this has just been an incredible support for our kids. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Lisa. Let's go ahead and open it up for public comment.
I'm not seeing any public comment at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Romy. So I will open it up for board comment, questions, discussion.
Yeah, I got a couple thoughts. First off, Lisa, thank you for the update. I've never done it, but it's my belief that running a school is a hard thing to do. And it's my belief that running an art school is even harder to do. And that running an art school that's phasing out auditions is even harder to do. And running an art school is phasing out auditions when a pandemic starts and you need to do distance learning is hard to do. And doing all that while never setting foot in the building is really, really hard to do. I know you didn't even meet many of your staff until April of this year, basically your 1-year anniversary. And I just want you to know I have so much deep respect for you and Mike and Katie and everybody in the team and Chris and Jeremy. And these are just names I can see right now. But getting through this year is a huge freaking accomplishment. There's some great wins. I'm very excited about that. There's a lot to work on, but I just want you to know, I have very, very deep respect for everything that you all did this year to get it as far as it went. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Other board comment? Wai-Ling?
Yeah, I think Mike did a really great job of describing what the challenges were and how you overcame them to just really run a successful program this year. And I want to particularly highlight the work on the leases. I do, though, remember from our last finance meeting that we aren't going to experience it as a $2 million, addition to our budget, and I'll be the first to say that, whatever additional money we can raise, we need to settle this, contract and figure out how to retain our teachers. That list of people who are leaving is also very, troubling. And so I definitely want to, all good news is very warmly welcome, but I just want to make sure that we're clear about what we do have in terms of new money. So I don't know if you can clarify that or if we can do it in a different meeting, but I just want to make sure that we're were being specific about that.
Did you want me to answer?
Yes, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there is a grant that we get that helps cover partial rent of our buildings. And so what they do is a formula. And so all the building rentals that we have get totaled up, and they will take either 70% off of the rent of that, or they look at your ADA. And so whichever number is less is what the school will receive. Now, although we are not renting suites, we will be renting a new building for visual art, and we still have to negotiate that. So we should be getting more revenue through SB 740 once we are able to get that finalized for the VA space, which will bring things up. But it's tricky. The OSA budget is very, very tricky. So that's one piece that I just wanted to share with regards to the leases.
Wayne?
Yes, I just want to, for those teachers and staff that's leaving, I just want to say thank you, for your service and support of the school. I am glad that we are administrating or implementing the exit interviews, because I think, that will give us qualitative insight as we sort of kind of look at the quantitative in terms of this general attrition, both under standard times, as well as this attrition, coming out of a pandemic. I think those numbers are two key, pieces that we should just look at in general. But I just want to say, just thanks for all the teachers and staff, and best to your next, next chapter. So that's it.
Thank you, Dwayne. Any other board comment at this time? Well, let me just also reiterate the very sincere thank you and best wishes to all of the staff and the leadership team, and to the teachers that are leaving. The staff that are leaving, we're very, sorry to see you go, but also just really appreciative of all of your efforts this year and for all the years, particularly for people that have been at OSA for many, many years, like Julie Humphrey, who taught all three of my children at OSA. Just very deep appreciation for all of you, and thank you for your service. And as Dwayne mentioned, I just wanted to share that the board members from the Equity Committee are engaging some of the staff that are leaving in in-depth exit interviews this year for the first time. I think that's happened at OSA, and we're hoping that the combination of the quantitative survey information as well as the qualitative information that we're gathering will help to inform our processes and increase the retention and support for teachers and staff at OSA. So with that, let's move on. We're going to move on the agenda to the principal's report.
Thank you, Josefina. Hey, everybody. Picture Miss Humphrey right now. She's on the highway in a Sprinter with the motorcycle in the back and has been looking forward to this for months. So I'm living vicariously through her. I have a pinched nerve in my back, so I apologize if I'm kind of off. It hurts really bad. My intention today is to give a brief, it feels kind of anticlimactic because there is so much to share, but we do not want to be in a 5-hour meeting. So acknowledging that, I'm going to give you some information just on closing out the school year, which has been a very challenging one. And then some information looking ahead to 21-22. And before I do that, before we jump to the next slide, just reiterating what everyone had just said, this team, 110 employees at OSA, I think it was about 14 of whom are not returning next year. Incredible team. I mean, the way that people have worked together all the way back to March of 2019 to this point, it's truly amazing to look back. So I have nothing but utmost gratitude for all the people I'm fortunate enough to be able to work with. Next slide, please. Graduation. So look at that. That was our first gathering outdoors as a school in quite a while. And that was the first gathering at City Hall since before COVID. So luckily we had parents and hardworking employees come together and make that happen. I love that aerial shot right in front of City Hall. We had 103 students graduating, 101 of them were seniors, 2 juniors graduating early. 6 of our seniors this year did not graduate on time. It's concerning. It's also something that we have close attention to. Of those 6 seniors, 3 are currently taking summer courses at Peralta to wrap up their credits. One is under the supervision of Ms. Schultz, I believe, daily right now on Sarba High classes, and 2 are pursuing their GED. So their progress is being monitored. We're hoping to have that graduation rate be the full 100%, but the pandemic definitely took its toll and caused us to have a few students fall behind. Next slide, please. So this is part 3. It's going to be less detailed. I hope this is an ongoing tradition of being able to provide the board with academic progress throughout the school year. We did 3 this year. It's probably not as necessary moving forward to do 3, but I really like being able to keep you guys up to date on what's happening internally in terms of the student progress. Mike King, we're going to focus on math and ELA today. Mike King, our math department chair, has done the math presentation. He is off somewhere enjoying his vacation. So I'm going to present on his behalf briefly, and then I'm going to hand it over to Chris for SRI. And in addition to what I already shared about appreciation, just I love working with Chris on this stuff. And she's here volunteering summertime hour, wanting to present SRI. I'm very grateful for her to be here and the passion that she puts into all that work. Next slide, please. So math, I'll give an overview. There's only 3 slides. What we have is last year and this year, in terms of the 2 bars, what you'll see overall is that the baseline scores for this year were higher than last year's. This is Mike's words here, but I'll do my best to represent them. The optimistic interpretation he would give you on that is that there's a strong math department. I'm glad I'm given this, actually. There is a very strong math department. I taught math, as you guys probably know, for many years at OSA. It is the strongest math department I have seen in the 15 years that I've been here. And I do believe that contributed to the high baseline. But as you look to that, the growth is not quite as much as it was in previous years. So though the students started higher, they did not see quite as much growth from that point. Math, 2 days a week. I'm not to make excuses, but let's be honest about how difficult that is to progress in a subject that really demands the daily attention. So I do believe remote learning played a key role in not seeing quite as much growth. From an optimistic standpoint, the baseline helps us. Our students are still in good shape. They have been in good shape, and they are continuing to be, but we're building in significant interventions for the upcoming school year to address where we've seen some of the declines. The beautiful thing about the MDTP is it gives us very nuanced look at what the specific content areas are where the students are struggling. You can identify it by standard. We can then do an analysis by different teachers, and we can share best practices on which class took a different approach to each standard and really inform instruction based on that. And also MDTP is a test taken at the end of the year. He put a note here that could have had some impact too on students may not have put in the full effort after a year of Zoom fatigue that they might otherwise have put in. Next slide, please. So here we have MDTP this year broken down by ethnicity. So the positive that Mike saw, the next slide is going to be last year broken down by ethnicity. The positive that Mike saw in his analysis was that the increase in scores was actually more equitable. There was not quite as much of a spread between different demographic groups. So for example, the index score of white and black students are closer, baselines 105 and 88 this year, compared to 108 and 74 last year. So it's, in his opinion, and I would agree with this, somewhat counterintuitive given I've given you other presentations on the obvious inequities connected to access to remote learning. We saw that with the grade point averages in the presentation I gave you last time. So we're not exactly sure why this is the case, but if you compare this to the next slide, you will see in the previous school year, there's much more discrepancy between the growth. So brief, but I think it gives you a picture. We're monitoring it. Can you go back two slides real quick? I just want to point out when we look at all the subject areas, sorry, Romy, if that's you controlling it. One forward. This, when it says seventh grade readiness, that's our sixth graders, right? It's determining their readiness for the next school year. So all of this data is factoring into how we're building our master schedule, which courses we're offering, and which interventions are going to be in place for which students. For our incoming sixth grade, they will be taking the MDTP right at the beginning of August. We were going to do it in June. We decided to give them a little break from Zoom. And we've, in talking with Ms. Schultz, she's confident that if she has those results right at the beginning of August, that it gives her enough time to do all the scheduling for those students. So with that, we can move it forward. I will hand it over to Ms. Bradburn.
All right. Hopefully my internet stays stable. So it's really interesting. I think all the hand-wringing of learning loss and the numbers, from my perspective, at least, shows something different, at least in terms of math and reading. So just a brief overview. SRI is the licensed service by Scholastic. We've been using it for about 6 years. And I think we're really starting to know how to use it. So you've seen this slide before, so I won't go over it in too much, but just this is the tool we're using. Next. So in the past, we've used a reporting structure where it was very much in line with the kind of CASP sort of structure. You've got proficient is where we want everyone to be. If they are one grade below, they were considered basic. Two or more was below basic, and above grade level proficiency was advanced. Next. This has always bothered a lot of us, both in terms of the stigmatizing impact, but also there was another thing in the SRI data that I found particularly interesting, which is when students advance past 1355, that means they're college and career ready. And that should be a goal for all of us, is to move our kids eventually into that college and career ready. So when I was fussing around looking at different reporting things, I discovered that I could actually go in and fine tune some of those labels. And we were able to, at that point, choose some terms that we felt were a little less stigmatizing. So instead of below basic, we're now saying emerging, which still means the same thing. It's the same basic meaning. There are two or more grades below current level, but the language is a little different. Progressing is within prior year's grade level band. Mastery is within grade level band. Exceeds mastery is above the grade level band, but not quite at that 1355. And then college and career is when they've surpassed it. The colors are going to be slightly different. They're the same basic thing, but they were kind of fixed in the SRI report. So now if it's yellow, green, or dark green, that means they're in the proficient zone or above proficient. If it's red or lighter red, they are not quite where we want them to be, but just thought this was a nicer way to convey this information to families and to kids and hopefully get them into a more growth-minded approach to reading. Next slide. And this is basically how it works. We've talked about this one before. This chart is from the last time I did it, and this is more in the old standard where it's below basic, basic, proficient, and above and advanced. But those are the bands. Basically, we want everybody eventually to get into those green bands. So, but you could see it each year, it gets a little bit higher. So what you see on each grade at each grade level is based on that new band, those numbers there. So next, please. And let's see. One thing I wanted to mention, if you note that in the grades 11 and 12, you won't see any students in the exceeds mastery, because once they get into the 1355, it's still within the proficient zone. And so they are, there's no exceeds mastery because that's spanned by the college and career ready. So you'll see that kind of drops out in 11th and 12th. So next. Okay, here's the data. Overall school proficiency, and I put the September, the beginning of the year numbers and the mid-year numbers, and then here's where we landed. Looks like it's kind of cut off on the bottom, which is a bummer. Let's see if I can smallify mine a bit. Nope, that didn't help at all. There we go, thank you, Mike. Except it's disappeared completely.
I was ready to take credit, but now that it's not a thank you, it's not me on the slideshow. So I don't
know. I can't see the slideshow anymore. Is that?
I'm actually editing it right now just to that data up a little bit for you.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I had so much to fit on the slides. I was trying to squish it all in.
Just give me a minute here.
No worries. Right. But the good news is we did progress in a way that was comparable to previous years. So I was pleased with that. We did not see the big drop that I had feared we might see. There we go. Thank you, David. So basically where we landed is, again, we want everyone in the yellow, light green, or green zone. And this is the whole school. So 36% of our kids are ready for college and career level reading. 23% are exceeding the mastery, which means they're above their grade level band. 26% are within that grade level band, and only 15% are below their grade level, which is pretty remarkable given the year we've had. We started the year with 21% were in that red zone and managed to get 6% out, which is great. On a grade level basis, 75% of the sixth graders are at mastery or above. And the rest of them are generally in the 87%-ish average there. I'm not that alarmed about the sixth grade, and you'll see why in a bit, because they are doing great. It's just where they started was much lower than everyone else. So next.
Sorry, real quick please. Question. What was the timing of the chart on the right that's the most recent?
No, I'm sorry, that was May.
May, thank you.
Yeah, I tried to push it back for the, as late as we could to try to get in every ounce of reading skills they might have developed. So yeah, that was the mid-May, most people did it. Thank you and please interrupt at any point. I thrive on questions and answers. So next. So this is the specific grade level proficiencies, and you'll see there that the sixth grade has about 25% is still below grade level, but when you get to the growth chart, you'll see I'm not unhappy with that at all. They did great. The seventh grade, we've got about 10%. Eighth grade, about 11%, 11 or 12, next. And in the high school, we've got about 11 in ninth, 17 in 11th, 18 in 10th. And that 7%, actually the 7, 8% in 12th, I think is a faulty number. We'll get to that in a bit. But anyway, overall, our numbers in terms of proficiency are looking pretty good. Now, obviously, we want to get eliminate all the red eventually, but in the scheme of things, this is pretty good. Next. Just to give you an idea, we did, with a big push on all the English department part, we did manage to get almost every student tested at least once this year, which is great. We had a number, it was tough on this with the seniors. And sometimes there's just connectivity or issues. It's just really tough to get some of the kids to complete the test. So given the challenges we were facing, I'm pretty happy with the numbers that we had tested. And it does allow us, the good news is, and I think Mike was going to talk about this, we are using these numbers to report to the state in lieu of the CASP. And this is totally within their threshold. What was it, Mike? They wanted 5% at a minimum.
Yeah, I mean, with CASP testing, you need to have 95% of your students test. This year, they told us we could use anything standards-based instead, this qualifying. They want 95%. They also say there is no consequence for schools who don't. My guess is most schools have come nowhere near this type of completion rate, given the circumstances.
So I was pretty thrilled with this. Next. And a special shout out to Katie Zog, who was my extra special nagger-in-chief with some of this. And other folks were helping out with that. As per request early in the year, we started doing our demographic reports and really cleaned up some of the technical things that were limiting that. So that was great. Just bear in mind, we've got a small sample size in certain demographic groups. We noted that students with disabilities and students in the Black African American subgroups had the lowest percentage of students at mastery or above. Asian and white students had the highest percentage of students at mastery or above. Other groups showed not a whole lot of difference from the school-wide average. And just for, as we look at these numbers, the statistics for female students tended to be the closest to the school-wide average. So you can kind of use that as the norm, if you look at that sort of thing. Next, there we go. You'll note here, I left out American Indian, Alaskan Native. There were only 4 students. Gifted and talented had 0, which is just because we don't have that marked. Limited English proficiency, there was only 5. Pacific Islander, there was only 8. Migrant, there was 0, at least in the data that we've got. So I cut those out of this chart because that's not statistically relevant. In terms of the numbers, it's relevant, but the numbers wouldn't be mathematically accurate. So you could see what stands out for me on this chart is still within the scheme of things. And again, we always want to look to growth, and we'll have the growth slide coming up next. We do have some challenge areas. I think I mentioned our lowest proficiency is in the students with disabilities and the Black African-American, and then Hispanic students, or I'm sorry, economically disadvantaged, and Hispanic comes right after that. But you'll see in the growth chart, which is the next one. Next slide, thank you. We did actually do reasonably well across the board, and you'll see there. So Asian students had growth of 12, it went up 12% into mastery or above. African-American students went up 8%, economically disadvantaged 6%. 6% was about the average. Again, that female tends to be the average. So you'll see we had some pretty good growth across the board. So there's that.
Chris, can I point one out real quick?
Yes, please.
I know students with disabilities, we really want to keep building and increase more and more, but it is worth noting that 27% were in the lower category in the first test, and that went down to 17%. That's a 10% decrease. And sometimes we pay a lot of attention to the students in the upper categories and forget how much of a challenge and how important it is to be seeing the mobility from the lower categories.
Thank you, Mike. I also want to say, just anecdotally, I found as a teacher that my students with learning disabilities struggled the most with the remote learning. So that's definitely an area of concern for next year, is how to address that. That was anecdotally my observation, and the data here would support that.
And Chris, this is Duane. If I may add, I was just curious, for those what we call areas of opportunity, economically disadvantaged, disabled, do you show data, or did you see that there were groups that may have, or students that may have fallen in multiple groups? I can imagine maybe at least 2, meaning, you know, if you're African-American, economically disadvantaged, as well as maybe disabled. Were you able to capture data?
We don't have the ability to do that. You mean to like say, okay. But that's a good point. We are, and Mike, maybe you know, we are going to be moving this data into our PowerSchool. Does that have the capacity to do that kind of analysis?
Yeah, I think so, for like the intersectionality kind of data. And
it
would be very helpful to see.
So that's okay. Kind of a bigger project. Ms. T and I are going to be working together next week about transitioning some of the data into PowerSchool. I think that's what she called me. So so that maybe is where we can do that kind of analysis.
Perfect. Thank you.
So here's why I'm not worried about the sixth grade having the highest percentage of students not quite at proficiency yet. They also had the greatest growth. Now this chart is pretty typical year to year. We almost always see this kind of growth. And in fact, the numbers this year are not that much different than last year. So I'm pretty happy with this. We do see a notable number there with the 12th graders. According to the numbers, they actually became worse readers. I don't think that's accurate. I dug into the data, and what I found is that 16 12th graders who were in English 1A, which is the early college credit, did not take the May test at all. And of those, 10 were already at college and career ready. 13 seniors tested below grade level. However, 8 of those seniors have tested at or above mastery in the past. So I think a lot of the senior results are not accurate representation of their actual levels. And I see that, I saw that play out in the 11th graders a little bit too. And even the 12th and to a smaller degree, the 9th grade. I think that's a piece of what's happening with this chart. But I also think what's happening is in those lower grades, you used to have a wider range of plasticity, if, as it were, in your lexile growth. It's just a lot more opportunity growth. For example, in first grade, like a range of up to 500 points in 1 year is totally typical, not atypical at all. So as they move up in grades, there's just less for them to move around. So I got some growth for each grade level now, which is, next slide, please. So this is for each grade level. In the sixth grade, 5 students moved out of emerging by the end of the year, which was thrilling because in January, we weren't seeing a lot of movement at all. So I was really happy with that. 16 students moved from the non-mastery into the mastery zones. 15 students moved to or above mastery. And by the end of the year, 11 students in sixth grade were ready to go to college. So I always tell them, okay, we can't see you next year. You got to go to college now. But then they laugh. It's a good time. Seventh grade, 5 students moved out of emerging, 8 moved into mastery, 17 to above mastery, and 34 seventh graders are now college ready. And you can see the numbers in eighth. 35 of our eighth graders are college ready, 17 are at above mastery, 9 moved into mastery. In high school, next slide. Similar sort of thing. Again, we see the growth really tapering down. 11th grade, we definitely saw some stalling there in the growth, which is interesting. So some analysis to do for our seniors next year. So next slide. So the end of year takeaways. As I just said, the data suggests that the upper grades struggled more with making reading gains in remote learning than lower grades. I don't know if that was remote learning specifically or more like the emotional aspect of remote learning and feeling disengaged from school, because I definitely saw that more so when I had a high school class, and I saw that more in the high school students than I saw it in my sixth graders. Also, that data could be skewed due to lower participation. In the demographic data, the proficiency and growth suggests that growth occurred in all groups. There are some disparities that continue to exist, and we're going to continue to take measures to address those. Growth within the mastery bands, students in the progressing mastery and higher bands did make those gains. And we did see that movement out of the emerging band, which was not as as much happening in the mid-year. So I was really happy to see some movement out of that emerging band at the lowest level. So anyway, I think there's one more slide. Yeah, going forward, we're going to analyze grade level demographic growth to identify challenges and successes, and really want to work to strategize ways to get better data from the upper grades. So I just don't think that's as accurate as it could be. We're also going to keep working with the teachers, students, and families to get people thinking about a growth mindset approach to reading and those SRI scores. And we're going to continue to share the data analysis with other teachers to inform their teaching. And I'm going to encourage other classes to integrate their work to further support reading goals. And happy to take any questions if you've got them. That's the end of me. Josefina, you're muted.
Thank you. One of our favorite Zoom phrases. I'm sure we have questions, but let's take public comment first, and then we'll come back to the board questions.
There's a couple of slides still beyond SRI. Do you want to?
Go ahead, Mike. Finish.
Okay. Will you put up the slideshow real quick? I just wanted to give a quick little glimpse into next school year.
Yes.
In terms of professional development, we have 4 threads that we're going to be focused on, each with somebody organizing with support and budget surrounding that. But our JEDI thread is going to be organized by Kayla Stepter, who you guys will get to know soon. She's actually going to be starting on Monday. Special education inclusion model advancement. This is going to be a big move forward for OSA to make sure that all faculty and staff are trained and supportive of a full inclusion model, which is what we have at OSA, but there's many areas that are still in need of growth to fully substantiate that. Sarah Ordaz. Dolores Thompson, her work this year has been incredible in terms of the pathway development. It's been work that's been taken on by a variety of people in previous years, and to have her as the point person, we've seen so much growth. She's going to have one of the threads. And then Ms. Zog and her team are going to have a very critical thread supporting students as they return to campus. Let you kind of just breeze through. I will not read it. But these are some of the supports that Ms. Zog and her team are putting in place for the upcoming school year. And we're doubling down on the math intervention and English intervention classes with able to use the MDTP and SRI data as a way to populate those classes. I think you can move forward now. We have new course offerings. Senior Capstone is part of the pathway development. It's the culminating course for students in their pathway as they, you know, build their digital portfolios and take a detailed look at entrepreneurship through their art form. It's the continuation of the freshman Business of the Arts class. Middle school students are going to be able to take elective, well, not even elective, but intensive courses within their pathway, but outside of their area of specialization. Ethnic studies is going to be a U.S. history requirement for all of our 11th grade students, A through G approved, fulfilling the U.S. history requirement. Physics, well, we've been on a process in the last few years to redesign our science sequencing, and it's the final year of it where we will no longer have like a double up in grade levels, and physics will now be happening for all 11th grade students. We're further developing the City College opportunities with a bunch of different colleges. And Dee Dee Stevens actually was on the list of teachers leaving, but we're meeting with Chabot. She teaches theater at Chabot, and we're trying to coordinate with them to have her teach theater at OSA as a City College class. And she's very excited, wants to stay with us. And we're very excited because we want her to. Health Navigating Life for all ninth grade students. And then the increased intervention courses I was mentioning. We have new hires and new roles. You can look through the list. There's new positions. Theater had quite kind of turnover this year. Tavia, she was my eighth grade student many, many years ago, my first year at OSA, and she's coming in as an alum. We'll actually be teaching one of my nieces. So here's a lot of the new hires, in addition to some people who have been lifted up to new roles. The people that you are already aware of who are lifting up, Crystal Yan's taking over as a science department chair. Kev Choice and Emily Tian are the new instrumental music co-chairs. And then Dolores Thompson, who this school year that just ended was a half pathway coordinator. It was the first time we put that role in as a unique role, and watching the way that she ran with it and everything that she's got in terms of her vision, it made perfect sense to bump that up to full time. And it is worth noting that of these 11 people here, 8 people are people of color, and there's been a very strategic effort to try to increase the number of POC teachers on our campus. And I think that's it for me.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Mike, for the presentation. Let's go ahead and open it up to public comment, and then we'll come back for the board discussion.
Okay, I see Karen Morphin for public comment.
Hi, this is Karen Morphin. I wanted to specifically talk about the improvement of some of the special education students getting into a higher level. I would just want to say, I don't know if Sarah Das is here, but I just want to acknowledge that this year I've seen a tremendous amount of effort from the students, the SPED department, cross collaboration with parents, as well as, you know, an immensely cohesive team. I just want to acknowledge that my daughter is an example with severe dyslexia and, you know, ADHD. She had never been able to move levels the way she did. She had actually experienced regression the first half of the year, and the special education team actually was able to bring her up to a higher level even before the regression. So I just want to just first give a shout out to the special education department. I want to acknowledge that, you know, they're a big part. I mean, our kids do a lot of work, and it's been really hard for them. And, you know, they come with their own difficulties, but the special ed team this year has done an amazing job on, you know, getting them there. And lastly, I just want to, you know, have this opportunity to also request that, you know, as we talk about supports for these people, for the SPED team and its families and new families, to remind them that we do have a family-run parent organization, POTS, and that we would, you know, we would like to see POTS listed as the resources for also for special education and for the incoming families. So, and thank you, Chris, for all that data.
Okay, any other public comment?
I'm not seeing any.
Okay, thank you, Romy. So board questions, comments?
I appreciate Mike and Chris's presentation. It's always about the students. And so for me, this is the most important and fulfilling presentation. So thanks for a great year.
Thank you, Steve. Jason?
I also wanted to congratulate Chris and Mike, Katie, and all of the teachers for a tremendous job. We know that statewide, that we've heard the term learning loss thrown around left and right is kind of an assumed outcome from this year. And the data that you showed earlier, as well as the data that you show now, not just looking at not having learning loss, but for example, that the trend that you showed, Mike, with our students with disabilities, where we're seeing improvements, is really a tremendous achievement. And it speaks to the attention and care that the staff is showing to students at OSA. So just want to extend my appreciation and say how impressed and amazed we all are with the work that you've been doing, and really the whole staff.
Thank you, Jason. Other board comments, questions?
Just very good. People have said it already, but very impressive.
Thank you. So I think, you know, just to reiterate what everyone has already said on behalf of the board, just thank you so much for all of these efforts. I mean, they're Herculean in so many different ways. And as parents who were also working from home as our children were in remote learning with the variety of teachers at OSA, we had a really unique view into the classrooms and into the curricula that we have never had before. And it was extremely impressive. The inspired teaching that I was able to see in many of my my son's classes, middle and high school, and also just the care that the teachers took in terms of engaging the students and checking in on them and, you know, not forcing them to put on their cameras when they were not prepared to have their cameras on. Everybody, all of kids had those days this year. So really want to thank you all for your efforts and also for the way that you're tracking and presenting this data back to the community. It's so important to be able to measure our progress, and we could not do it without you know, the efforts of Mike and Michael King and Mike and Katie in terms of collecting this data and then presenting it back to the community so we can really see how we're doing and verify that the data is telling the same story. So thank you all for all of these efforts. Very, very inspiring and very much appreciated. Okay, so we're gonna move on with this agenda. We're at the LCAP hearing item.
I think it's me again. Okay, I'm gonna wake up. We did LCAP last month. So there's been, I don't know how many people have had a chance to review it, but there's been some small shifts, but nothing too substantial. Overview, as you know, it's an important compliance document. I shared with you last month that we're aligning all of our compliance documents so that there is a very coherent ability to create goals around them, monitor them quarterly, share them with new teachers as they come in. It's gonna be a move forward. There's been a lot of different opportunities for feedback, surveys, emails, town halls, board meetings, but remote has made it a little challenging. In addition to all these things, we would like to create a calendar for upcoming years where there's more opportunities for specifically the parent community feedback in the design of the LCAP. So now we're up for approval to the board. There's been some modifications that have taken place. I'm going to give you guys a little snapshot of the goals that are embedded in it and the action items connected to those goals. In the feedback we got, I was looking at the spreadsheet in addition to, you know, the town halls and all the info I got. I just kind of bullet pointed three trends. They probably won't be a shock to people here. We've heard them often, but these were three trends that came up that are embedded not only into the goals themselves, but also into the action items with specific outcomes. For a school-wide focus on JEDI priorities into all aspects of OSA programming. And Josefina, what you shared with us at the beginning is a clear indicator of progress that's going to be made in that regard. It does need to start from the top and make sure that it comes to all other aspects of the school. I'm reimagining career and college preparation, more specifically, even prior to COVID. The emphasis on college is still important, and we want all of our kids to be eligible for college, though financial circumstances, changing industries, and a variety of other factors have increased the importance of career. And luckily, we're a little ahead of the curve with the pathway development that we started 3 or 4 years back, but that's embedded into these goals quite a bit. And then the support for socio-emotional supports for students post-pandemic. Let's move forward. Goal one, I shared with you, I won't read through each of these, but you can reread what the goal is, and then you can view a few of the action items connected to each of those goals. So my suggestion is we just pause on each of these slides for a few seconds. And if you have questions as we go, if it's okay, I'm fine taking them. Can we go back real quick? I want to point something out. We have seen an increase in students that do graduate and may have D's as part of their graduation, but are not A through G eligible. And as a school, we're going to be very strategically increasing the numbers of our students that are graduating A through G eligible. Okay, next one. So the next steps, as we're setting our outcomes for, as we monitor our outcomes in the upcoming years, we'll be sharing progress towards these goals. As I shared, they're aligned with the other accountability documents. And then also, as I shared, we're already building out what our calendar looks like for next year. And it's going to be, there's going to be an emphasis on making sure that families know well in advance which dates we're going to be sharing progress towards these accountability documents so everybody can have increased input on it.
Just one question on the health and wellness mm-hmm. goal. I think it would be good to include in there something about collaborating with families on the health and wellness strategies. Sure. I don't see that in there. I think it would be good to specifically articulate that. So let's open it up for public comment. All right, I don't see any public comment. So let's open it up for board comments, questions. Jason?
Another thank you and kudos to you, Mike. In my day job, I'm also delivering and completing the LCAP documents. And so For those that aren't aware, Mike is being fairly humble. There's an LCAP update along with a new LCAP document, along with this expanded learning opportunity grant, along with a variety of the LCP update. There's just a ton of data reporting and analysis that was needed this year. And the LCAP was a bigger lift this year than it has been in years past. So I know the amount of work that you put into it, the amount of time that it takes to gather all of the information and make sure that you're meeting all of the county's requirements, as well as a lot of data requirements where data isn't readily available in all areas. So I just wanted to thank you for the amount of work that I'm sure you put into it, and as well as keeping the community and the board abreast of all of the changes and all of the content within the LCAP. So thanks, Mike.
Thank you. I can't in good conscience not give a shout out to Romy, because she did so much of like the foundational stuff there, and then her and I will meet and we're just busting away at adding all the details. So she's been a huge help on this. There hasn't been enough time to get stuff done this year. It's just a fact. So without a team of people doing that, Romy was a huge help on this LCAP.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, I'll echo that. Part of my day job, I try and help with and avoid LCAPs depending on the day, but I know what goes into it. I forget the answer to this question if it's been told already, but you mentioned WASC in here and it's been mentioned a couple of times. What, remind me the timing of WASC, like when we hear what we're going to hear next?
So Julie and I last week we got recommendations from the visiting committee and we finalized based on the recommendations. That included adding a couple goals and a bunch of action items connected to it. They, as far as I understand it, have 6 weeks to respond to that. We tried to get it in. We could have waited another 4 weeks. We chose not to. One, because it was nice to put closure to it. Two, because we had communicated with them with the anticipation of hoping to receive it by the end of June. So they said that if we got it in last week, there's a good chance for that. That's our hope, but technically it could be a few weeks later.
Yeah, thanks for the update, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay.
A year, huh? Everything was due.
Other board comments, questions, suggestions?
Yeah, I had a quick question. I do agree that this is really great and the goals are very clear and helpful. What is the 25% not A through G eligible number? Is that like, is that unusual? I mean, I thought that our college and career readiness was closer to the 90% in most years.
Is that a
pandemic thing?
Yes. And it's the same reason to what I understand other schools have actually changed, had the board adopt new policy to make the passing the C grade go down to 65%. Technically, if a student is receiving a grade in the 60%, now they have a D, right? Per the way our school grading has been done. So that has resulted in the college and career readiness drop. I wouldn't say it's all pandemic, but it's definitely had an impact. Mm-hmm. And we've got makeup work to do for the students that are freshmen through juniors this year that are wrapping up, because there are students with Ds that we want to be able to give them the opportunity to make sure that that grade is not their final grade on their report card, including looking into how those can be converted to pass, not pass grades in the right circumstances. So we're trying to make sure that that number goes up substantially, but also the reduction or that percentage change is not going to just be this year's seniors. There's like, you know, impact on all of our current high school students. So a lot of work ahead. Mm-hmm. I see Katie Zog, her face here, because her and her team have a lot of work focused on this initiative.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other board comments or questions? No. Well, again, thank you, Mike and Romy and the whole team for pulling all of this together in the midst of many competing and parallel reporting and compliance things that have to go in for the school. So thank you all for your effort. Let's move on now to the budget presentation.
Good evening, everyone.
So there is a vote on the LCAP that was needed before the budget is approved.
Thank you, Romy.
Sorry about that.
Okay, let's take a vote. I'll need a motion to accept and approve the LCAP report.
So moved.
Thank you, Steve. We need a second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Jason. So we'll do a roll call vote. Mike?
Yes.
Adrian?
Yes.
Thank you. Steve?
Yes.
Thank you. Jonathan? Not here yet. Wiling?
Yes.
Okay. Jason, did I call on you yet? No.
Yes.
Jason. Okay. Dwayne?
Yes.
Thank you. And I also vote yes. So the LCAP is approved. Now on to the budget presentation.
Okay. Good evening again, everyone. Sometimes during our finance committee meeting, like Mike Barr likes to point out when we're ahead in terms of the time on the agenda. So I just want to say we're ahead like by a few minutes in the agenda. So he just likes to point out when we are on track and everything. So thank everybody.
Done by 10:05 today. Kimberly,
I don't like to jinx it. That's why I don't call it
maybe
out.
Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it. It's not going to be my fault if it starts going over. I take it back.
Okay.
So Susan and I are going to kind of tag team on our presentation tonight. She's going to kind of give updates on the May revise, pull some key points out from there. We're going to go through our revenue and our expenses and how that all kind of rolls in together to the budget summary that you guys are used to seeing. And then we'll take questions after that and vote after the presentation. Thank you. Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, that sounds great. Hi, good evening, everyone. So I just want to say that your admin and finance team have been working so diligently on this budget. I mean, we're meeting weekly, but I think we've had changes every couple of days, probably to get to the point where we're at tonight. So lots of hard work has gone into it. The May revision, as a result of, you know, really unexpected surges in state revenues and really robust federal stimulus, the 2021 May revise, it really proposed some bold investments in education. And the good news is we're not expecting the unforeseen and changing budget cycle that occurred last year. So much more stable year we're expecting moving forward. The May revise also proposes a mix of ongoing and one-time investments. A lot of investments in education, including like $3.3 billion in support for initiatives and training. And a lot of those specifics will come out when the budget is approved next week. So, you know, we've been kind of asked to put dollar signs to some of those initiatives, and we just don't have that level of detail yet. But lots of, as I'm sure you guys have heard in you know, you guys are in this arena also. But we did want to say that the May revise does assume a return to full-time in-person instruction. So it doesn't offer any hold harmless in funding that like we had last year. So it does revert to pre-COVID laws of funding calculations. So all schools will be funded on their actual ADA for this coming school year. So next slide, please. So the May revise does recognize that many students may still prefer an independent study option. So the governor is proposing a series of permanent changes to longstanding independent study laws. So we're kind of watching to see what happens with that. Good news, the May revise, all of the deferrals that were in the budget for 21-22, so for this coming year, have been eliminated, which is fantastic because obviously we're living through those deferrals still, you know, still this year. We won't be fully repaid until November. So the only deferral that's left will be June to July of 22. So just it's like a 3-week deferral of one payment, which is great news. So the May revise is typically a fiscal update to the governor's January budget proposal, but this year it also contains a lot of new policy proposals, as I mentioned. So the legislature has to act to accept, reject, or amend the budget by the 15th. So coming up very closely here, we'll actually have a signed budget. Last week, the budget committees of the House and legislature adopted their final recommendations of the subcommittees. And so this week, the negotiations between the governor and the legislature have been continuing behind the scenes, so we're well on track to have an approved budget by Tuesday. Okay, so next slide is some of the revenue. So now we kind of want to switch to your actual 2021-22 budget and kind of where we're at today. So the highlights of revenue, all of your LCFF revenue is based on student enrollment of 820 with a 96% attendance rate, and that's carried across all 3 years. So the May revise does recognize the COLA from 21-22 of 1.7% adds, I'm not going to be able to see because I've got everybody's pictures here, but ultimately what it's resulting is the COLA from last year, the statutory COLA from this year. So actually an increase of 5.07% COLA for funding. So that's great news. Also an increase in COLA for some of the like mandate block grant and your special ed revenue. So we've seen slight increases in those areas as well. So those are reflected in the budget you're going to see in a second. We also, of course, included your income for the in-person learning and extended learning grants. And also we have a third round of ESSER funding that we are capturing in this budget as well. Next slide. Perfect. Okay, so this slide is just a breakdown of your total 21-22 revenue. So you can see as of right now, we're projecting total revenue of just over $11 million. The bulk of the revenue obviously comes in your LCFF, so your state aid, your EPA, and your in lieu of property taxes. And then we've got, sorry, I can't see the full slide, but you've got all of your state revenue. So your mandate block grant, lottery, both restricted and unrestricted. You see the one-time funding, the in-person expanded learning of $358,000. Then there's the SB 740 rent reimbursement. We talked about that earlier. We're estimating that this year at $673,000. And there was a slight increase to that this year, which is good news also. And then we have your state special ed revenue of $580,000. So that's your total state revenue. Then we move on to your federal revenue. So we've got your federal special education and then your title funding. So your Title I, Title II, and Title IV. And then we go down to local. And so we've highlighted kind of the blue areas because really what I think what we wanted to point out is that the blue areas are really the only areas of your budget that you have control over. Everything else is ADA driven, you know, mandate driven. But those are the areas that you know can kind of shift and change based on your priorities.
Right, and we're currently budgeted, just wanted to point out also, limited in raising certain revenue projections. I mean, of course, once the budget passes, if there are little additional grants that are approved, we will make those adjustments and add those. But because we're budgeting at our current
Did we lose you?
Kimberly,
you're frozen.
Generator of revenue. For the school, but right now, since we are capped, we're not able to project additional revenue, like Susan said, outside of the
Kimberly, you're coming in and out. I'm wondering if Susan can kind of take over to.
So I think what Kimberly's trying to say is that we're going to continue to monitor as we get final details next week and we'll make a few tweaks. We've got some narrow movement, I think.
I think that, yes. The fact that your enrollment's capped at 820. And so that's, you know, so there's not a lot of flexibility in increasing additional enrollment. I think that's what you were trying to say, Kimberly. Okay, should we go to the next slide? Okay, so just quick overview of some of the highlights.
Thank you, Mike and Susan, yes.
Okay, good. You're welcome. Just a few changes in the expenses. So the STIRS rates have been increased. So 21-22 went from an estimate of 15.9. This is the employer contribution. So went from 15.92 to 16.92. And then the two out years went from 18% estimated to 19.10. So we've adjusted those figures in the budget. Also wanted to point out that your special ed student count has increased. So it did result in some departmental expenses kind of throughout the budget to cover services for those incoming students. So those adjustments have been made. And then obviously we made the adjustments to the Fox lease and then the SB 740 kind of in conjunction with that Lisa talked about earlier also. So those are all reflected in the expenses. Next slide. All right, so here's just a quick breakdown of your expenses. I know a lot of times when you see the budget, it just says books and supplies. So this kind of shows you, we wanted to show you all the categories that fall within that. So within the books and supplies, you obviously have things like textbooks, janitorial supplies, technology. Really, those are anything tangible, things that you can touch, tend to go in the 4,000s, we call them, the books and supplies. So your total there is $317,195, broken out between all of those different categories. And then down below that, we have all of your services and operating expenses. Those come to almost $2.2 million, but include all of those areas that are listed there as well. And then off to the side here, the team just felt it was important to kind of pull out of there a few of the bigger ticket items that are included in your services and operating, those being operations and housekeeping, your lease expenses, of course, your educational consultants, professional consultants, and financial services. So those are included in the 2.1 million, but a little more detailed information for you there. Okay, I'm gonna move this out of the way because I can't see. Okay, so here's actually the summary of the 21-22. This is your 3-year projection summary. So you'll see that, like we mentioned, all 3 years are based on enrollment of 820, average daily attendance of 787.2. So that breaks down to the 96%. So that's actually what we're projecting you'll be funded on. Then we've got all the revenue that we just spoke about broken out, your state, federal, other state, and local, and then all of your expenses there also. So your personnel summaries, books and supplies, services and operating. The capital outlay is your depreciation expense. And you do see that we're getting to the end of your depreciation schedule. So I think by 24-25, it goes away completely. I mean, you're down to $32,000 in 23-24. So we're pretty much at the end of your depreciation schedule, which is great. So a couple things that we wanted to point out. You'll see that federal revenue increases in 22-23. And that's because that's where we project spending the third round of your ESSER funds. And that's about $161,000. So that's included in 22-23. State revenue decreases in 22-23. And that's just kind of the opposite, that the one-time state money we were using in 21-22. So then we don't recognize that again in 22-23. And then on the expense side, there's a decrease in services and operating expenses from 21-22 to 22-23. And we've decreased legal fees. We feel like we anticipate a reduction in some of those services. So we have, you know, slightly decreased that. And then there's an increase in services and operating from 23-24. And that's because the Fox rent reduction is a 2-year agreement. So then we've kind of factored back in all of the full rent that we know now, starting again in 23-24. So basically assume, you know, whatever's in here is what we know at this time. So that all of that leaves just a very slight deficit for 21-22 of $28,000, $79,000 in 22-23, and $190,000 in 23-24. So we're very close to being in the black, but not quite there. All right, so moving forward, like I mentioned, this proposed budget reflects what's been proposed by the governor. We will know more next week, obviously, but your financial, this budget needs to be submitted to OUSD by June 15th. So our plan is to submit the board approved budget as is approved, and then any additional changes will be reflected at the first interim when we submit to OUSD in December. So obviously, as we just talked about, your current operating budget does forecast deficit spending. So OSA's leadership and finance team is just continuing to meet regularly, plugging in anything and everything that we know in, you know, discussing ways to try to eliminate any deficit. And then obviously the board will be updated on any significant changes in revenue or expenses throughout the 21-22 fiscal year. I think that's the end. Yes.
Okay. Thank you both. Let's go to public comment and then we'll come back to board questions and discussion. And I see Chris has her hand up.
Yeah. Are you able to hear me? I had to switch can you hear me okay?
Hear you. Yes.
Great. I had a question. It was more clarification. I saw on an earlier slide, they said that there was about 712,000 and change for the spring return. And then in this one, it said something about 358,000 for 21-22 also attached to return the in-person learning. I was just curious if those were the bundled together or if there was a difference between those two.
So what's happening with that money is part of it's being apportioned in current year, so 2021, then part of it's coming in 21-22.
Okay.
So yeah, so we'll recognize it as it's being spent also. So it is broken out. So your total, I could find those breakdowns. In fact, I have them on my computer here. Your total COVID money that's come in across, you know, I guess essentially it'll be over 3 years is like $946,000. But it's coming, like part of it's already spent, part of it's 21-22, you know.
Got it. Okay.
That's the difference.
Thank you. That was very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? No, I don't see anybody else. So let's go ahead and go to the board. Questions, comments?
I have a couple of questions. The first is around enrollment, the 820 enrollment. Do we have 820 students enrolled for next year?
I can probably best answer that if that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. Yes, depending on which day you ask. We can't over-enroll or under-enroll, so we're in a really tight spot. But I work with Michaela Peters daily, and as soon as somebody withdraws, we put another offer out. And also, the hardest part to predict is the eighth to ninth grade shift, because you'll see in any given year, maybe 25 kids not continue from eighth to ninth. So this year, we actually got a letter of intent to return out to everybody and got active withdrawals and believe we've captured the people who are not withdrawing. So there are unknowns ahead. We do have a wait list. It in some areas has diminished. We're going to open up another round of auditions where necessary, and we're just going to keep pressing and try to keep it right at 820.
So today's enrollment is what?
Like as of right now for next year, I think it's 816 with the most two recent withdrawals.
Okay, great, thank you.
Yeah, but I once again can't overdo it, right? So we're really cornered to like keep it right at 820.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then a quick question for either Kim or Susan. The Measure G1 number looked a little low to me. Is that including both the arts and the bonus piece or just the arts piece?
It's just the arts piece for now. So okay. Once we get I need to check the slide to see if that number has been released. It'll be updated and then also put into the expense side for salaries.
Okay. Do you make any sort of allowance for the benefits piece attached to the bonus?
In terms of the expenses mm-hmm. that are tied to that? Mm-hmm. When we enter it into the salary table or salary portion of the budget, it calculates all of the salary-driven benefits that are tied to that number that we put in. So it flows through the document. So it will be captured, yes.
Okay, will be, but it's not in there now.
No, because the amount that's going to be given for the bonuses, that amount is not in there now.
Okay. I would just recommend in the future putting something in now, earlier, so then you have some sort of an allowance for that extra expense.
Okay. Definitely update that before, once I double check with the number, double check and finalize what that number is. We can have that information updated for first interim.
Okay, wonderful, thank you. And this is more of a comment. This is by far the lowest deficit that I've seen in a while. And I do wanna just really recognize the work that goes into this. I know how incredibly difficult this year has been, the last 2 years really, and quite the roller coaster. But I'm really concerned about continually seeing the multi-year deficits. So I want this budget to move forward, but in the future, I'm not able to
justify a yes vote on a budget that continues to be red.
Thank you, Adrian.
I'm gonna piggyback on that. Thank you, Adrian. This is, you know, the Finance Committee has been seeing numbers, you know, with like between 80 and 150K loss next year, if I remember the last sort of couple versions we've seen. This is so close to being break even. And my question for the team is, what could we do to break even? And then we'll turn to the board on feedback, whether the board would give the direction to have it break even before we approve tonight. But if the mandate were to find 30 grand, which is 2,500 bucks a month to get to break even, how would the team go about that?
Honestly, the first step, of course, would be to comb through the expenses again, right? And I don't want to say like we've combed through those to the bare minimum of combing through and trying to find areas to cut, you know, but honestly, that's what we've done. So we would probably have to review the revenue pieces as well and see if there are any additional shifts that we can make in-house. Part of that will be looking at what our plans are for show revenue as an example. So right now, typically in a regular year, the school brings in, well, the last real school year we had, which was 18-19, we brought in about 89,000 in show revenue. So we've projected, you know, our original projection was 100K, but of course, you know, we brought it down because we're anticipating, well, if we're back in the building and we do half of year, full throttle, second semester, get prepared, and we're able to do OSA and do our shows the way that we do, we could possibly bring in that revenue. So maybe further conversation will be to look at what our shows will look like in the fall. And do we think that maybe the fall could bring in more revenue than we've projected? Because currently we really have the bulk of the revenue in the spring for those shows. So, you know, that could be a way. Looking at just coming through the revenue pieces and seeing if there's any shifts that we can do there. Because the operating expenses we have shaved.
Yeah, and so I please take this in the spirit it's intended. I know how much work has gone into this. I know it's a very bare bones budget, but just in the overall scheme of things, a 0.3% adjustment to either revenue or expense yields 30 grand. A 3% increase in fundraising yields 30 grand. So I frame it that way just because it's so close.
It is so close. I just want to make sure that our team, and we will continue to do the work. This, of course, is not finalized. It's finalized in the sense that we have to submit a budget. And this is our budget reflecting what we know now. But of course, we will go back and we will look through and we will have discussions. But what we need to present, I feel like our responsibility is to present the truest reflection of what we think the school will spend and receive. And so I don't necessarily want to just, you know, throw an extra amount here or remove something there when what we have in front of us right now tells this picture. Of course, the goal is to get there. I'm right along with you guys. The goal is to get there. But this is, you know, the truest picture of the budget spending for what we have.
I completely understand. But it's so close that the board is at a crossroads of whether we give you that guidance. And again, I'm not around next year when the budget happens, so I'm just offering some.
I hear you.
Other board comments, questions? Well, let me
ask a follow up question for the discussion we just had. So, is your mindset, Mike, just making sure I'm clear, you would like to see us take this back and
I just want to frame for the board that we're this close, and I'm actually going to abstain on the vote tonight because my term ends in August. So I just frame it as something for the board to consider. I'm not suggesting that it be one or the other. Do I think we can find it over the course of the year? Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Any other board questions, comments?
Yeah, I have a question. What is the current status of whether in-person learning is mandatory for students? And if it's not mandatory, what happens if a family just doesn't want to send their kid to school? Does that impact the budget?
It does.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
As of now, our best understanding is that an independent study option would be presented to the students, and it would be through OSA. And that's why there's the changes to how independent study has been offered. Like OUSD, they're actually withdrawing from their neighborhood school and going through OUSD, but at a OUSD independent study school of sorts. So their money will stay within district. Ours, we expect to stay on site. I got a survey out to, you know, the 780 families. I heard back from 350, not quite as many as I'd like to, but 99% report comfortability coming back in the fall. So we do expect almost all, and we're preparing for what an independent study program would look like for those who are not.
Lisa?
I was in a charter school meeting yesterday, as was Adrian. And at the tail end, they started talking about the independent study, but there's a real push for all in-person learning, and they are going to put a cap on independent study per school by a certain percentage. I think it's around 20%. However, you know, if the student leaves the school, they leave the school, and obviously we don't get the dollars for them.
Any other board questions or comments?
Josefina, just the obvious that this really lends itself to a greater focus on fundraising and a plan around that.
Mm-hmm. I have a comment, Josefina, if you don't mind.
Yes, Jonathan.
Just sort of taking off on what Mike is suggesting, should the board charge the administration to come back with a balanced budget because we're so close? Or is that not appropriate to ask for at this point?
In terms of our timeline, now I heard, I think Susan said that this board is due to OUSD by June 15th.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay. So we would, if we charge the staff with that task, then we would have to meet before the 15th to approve that budget. So if the board is willing to do that, then I think we can definitely, you know, ask staff to come back with a balanced budget.
How that does was a ask. Couldn't we just approve it subject to
balancing it?
Being balanced?
Meaning come back with no deficit.
And we're speaking of year one, no deficit, correct?
Correct.
Well, at a minimum, yeah, that's the one we are committed to at this point, right?
Just to be clear, my position is not necessarily that year one has to be balanced, but we can't continue to have annual deficits.
For what it's worth, sorry, I know I started this and then sort of stepped back. A $30,000 loss, we're not going to lose a charter over that. We wouldn't get a charter not renewed because of that. We do have healthy reserves, that's part of it. But one thing that authorizers are going to look for, and to Adrian's very salient point, we need to keep an eye on it because running a deficit every year will make it very, very, very difficult to get a charter renewed in a few years. So could I get comfortable 30 grand? Sure. I'm just framing for the board a way to think about it. I'm not suggesting that the board do one thing or the other thing.
And Mike, sort of historically, because we've been on the board for a while, the school hasn't really run much of a deficit after all. We managed to come in within budget, you know, so we present a deficit, then the school comes back, somehow pulls it through.
Yeah.
That's been the history.
Yeah, there's also enough unknowns coming from the state in terms of additional funding that we may or may not receive next year. Some of the projections, we don't know where any new hires are going to come in on the salary schedule. I'd assume that we're estimating at the higher end. So I would say with a $30,000 deficit, that's close enough to balance that I would think that if we stick within our means, that we'll end up with a balanced budget at the end of the year. I know that's an assumption, but it's given the scale of our budget, that seems reasonable that there'd be at least, you know, a few percentage points that would be saved, unless every person we hire is at the maximum range that we could have projected at, and at the state allocations end up at our minimum assumptions.
I really agree with what Jason is saying about the education funding in the state budget. There are several other funding sources that could result in additional revenue for OSA. They just haven't been finalized yet. And so I think one possibility is increasing the projected state grants by $30,000. I think that's reasonable. We could also consider increasing the advancement goal by that same amount. But this board would have to make a serious commitment to working to raise that additional $30,000. The board would have to say, we're going to raise it.
Another possibility, Susan, I don't know, and Kimberly, I don't know if this is possible, is to change our assumptions for staffing so that any vacant positions, rather than, I don't know what assumption you use. Do you use the maximum amount, or is it the median? If you change the budget assumptions to the median median level for a new hire, that might be enough also on its own.
We can take a look at those. There are some vacant positions that are currently budgeted, like you said, at the max of transferable unit per this, you know, the steps. So like on the higher end. So we can take a look at those and see if, you know, based on the position that's open, if Lisa and Mike believe, or, you know, looking at what we have in terms of the applicants, the average of what's being presented, to see if that's a way to cut some of them.
And also keep in mind that nothing stops you from adopting another budget next month. So if we adopt this now and then the state adopts a budget and there's changes, nothing stops you from revisiting it and then adopting another budget, just so you have that most current budget going forward also.
Which is what we did last year when we had all of that additional relief funding come in. We started with 400K deficit and all the relief money came in and we were able to adopt another budget.
I didn't want to suggest that the board was going to start fiddling with the budget and picking line items that we think need to get fixed. I'm just suggesting that we approve the budget. Maybe somebody suggested conditionally upon the fact that the staff finds, the administration finds a way to balance it. In other words, zero deficit, zero surplus.
Jonathan, are you making a motion? Mm-hmm.
I suppose I am, yeah.
All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion.
Can I just ask a quick clarifying question? Is there any preference whether it's a reduction in expenses or increase in revenues?
No preference in my motion.
All right, so there's no modification or amendment to the motion that has been seconded. So we'll go ahead and take a vote if there's no more discussion on this motion. Okay, seeing that there is none, let's go ahead and take the vote. So, Adrian.
Yes.
Thank you. Mike?
I will abstain.
Okay. Steve?
Yes.
All right. Jonathan?
Yes.
Okay, Wiling?
Yes.
Okay, Jason?
Yes.
Dwayne?
I believe it's going to carry. I will abstain.
Okay, and I will vote yes. So the vote is, the budget is conditionally approved upon the administration's balancing of the budget for year one.
Josefina, thank you. Can I just give one observation? We've just heard three topics. We've heard about student performance. We've heard about LCAPS. We've heard about the budget. A shitload of work went into every one of those things. And there's a lot of people whose faces I can see right now that were deeply involved in all of them. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's a crazy time of year. It's a beautiful plan. It's very thoughtful. Thank you to everybody. I just want to acknowledge.
Yeah, it's. I second that. If that's a motion, Mike, I'd second that because it's been a brilliant job this last year getting us to this point.
I think the board is in agreement with all of the, both of those statements. So thank you all. We have one more report before we go to closed session. That is from advancement.
And no one look at their clock.
I know.
Don't pay attention to that against what's on. Sorry.
All right. Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Thanks for sticking it out. And also just, I just want to quickly say thank you to all of my colleagues and to the board members as well. I just want to acknowledge what everybody has been saying and echoing the great work that has happened this year. It's been an incredible year. So much has happened and I couldn't be prouder to be here right now. So thank you. So a few announcements, but I'm going to dive right into the report first. Let's get through the business and then we'll open it up for commentary. So in true fashion, I'm keeping things as simple as possible. If you need more data, please reach out. I'm happy to provide fuller information or more data as you'd like. But just to close out the year, some high level information here. I can't see everything. Okay. So we are ending the year as of 2 days ago, we're at $883,046. But just as of today, I'm happy to share that I think that through a new corporate partner, we actually might hit 900 by the end of the fiscal year. So I'm really excited about that. It's anonymous for now. You'll hear more information very soon from either myself or Miss Linda Ricciardi. You can just see the chart speaks for itself. We came in way over our goal for the annual fund campaign. So special shout out to our families and other individuals and our board members. Thank you so much. As well as those who went the extra mile and secured a matching gift through their employer. This all gets captured under the annual fund campaign. So thank you. I wanted to put in here, just you'll see this line item with the special events, it, again, self-explanatory. I wanted to show them here just to let everybody, remind everybody that this is actually part of our calendar year. These two events happen. And there's some notes at the bottom here that indicate how much was raised per each event. How we code them on the back end is not as separate line items. We actually code them towards the annual fund or towards this other foundation / corporations category. This number does not include some pending grant applications that we currently have out right now, but we may receive them before the end of the fiscal year. We're not sure. But anyway, we're continuing to fundraise into the next fiscal year. I also want to make a quick note here. I believe this was talked about at a previous board meeting, but just to reiterate it, that $44,000 was raised at the last Heart of Oakland event that will specifically go toward next year's JEDI program. So thank you again for everybody for showing up for that event and making a contribution towards these greater efforts. Next slide. Okay, just a really quick breakdown of how the fundraising happened this year and just where it was coming from. So I just took the same, there's a lot of different ways that you can slice the dice and slice and dice the information. However, just for tonight's purposes, I'll keep it really simple. So you can see by source here, the vast majority of fundraising this year came through the annual fund. And again, this is not just families, this is current families. Just keep in mind, this is also a budding alumni program that's shown here, as well as staff and faculty contributions, as well as board member contributions. And then when you compare this, we'll over to the constituent side, you'll see the breakdown of individuals, foundations, and corporations. And when you compare this on a national level, we're actually, it's interesting data to compare. So nationally speaking, on average, most nonprofits will actually secure about 80% of their fundraising from individuals. So there's a lot of great work that can be happening here within this realm. Most nonprofits actually only receive about 5%, 5 or 6% from corporations, and then around 15-16% from foundations. So just again, keep in mind, this is just a slice of the local funding. This does not include some of the great work that's being done by my colleagues, such as Mike, who's working on the Measure N and some other G1 grants and whatnot. But just looking at the localized funding, we're doing pretty well in certain categories, but there's definitely room to grow in one area. But from my perspective, perspective, there's room to grow in all areas. Next slide, please. I wanted to just give a really quick breakdown here of our restricted funding. So when I started OSA many years ago, I came into a situation where every department was responsible for a certain amount of their own fundraising. And so a lot of contributions were coming in as restricted. So we missed out because a lot of the contributions would be restricted towards a specific department that would be used for things that went beyond what was in the operational budget. So a lot of the work that has been happening over the last few years, many years, has been intentionally around centralizing the fundraising so that the vast majority, if not all of the fundraising, would go towards unrestricted. So I'm happy to share that this year we raised about $120,000 in restricted funding. And that 12% for fashion design, that just represents one grants award that we received that helped to underwrite the department. It wasn't going towards anything outside, above and beyond what was already in the operational budget. Lit Arts, we did, this did go a little bit outside. It was a $500 grant that went to supporting a visiting artist. But the vast majority of the restricted funding went towards supporting our budding Jedi program. So you can see here a little bit, a breakdown in the text here, some examples of the money that was raised. And then in parentheses, those that say FY22, that is what is already being restricted towards next year's program. And just please pay attention to the last note at the bottom here that does not include additional $41,500 in pending funds that will be restricted towards FY22's Jedi program.
Next okay, slide. I'm sorry, can I jump in here real quick and just clarify on the previous slide? And then I'm gonna turn the question to Kimberly. Kimberly, there's 44 plus seven here, so $51,000 for next year. How is that being recorded by CSMC in the projections? In other words, would it be recorded this year and released next year? Has it already been counted as a release of unrestricted funds next year that would flip us to positive?
So we have to recognize it in the year that it's received. So it's already—
But wouldn't it be temporarily restricted?
You could do that. You could do that, but then we've already, but see, the issue just becomes that we recognize the income already in 1 year. So it's hard to bring that. Like we talked about that and if we could defer it, but I'm told no. We tried to be—
Right.
Okay, so it feels like these are artificial restrictions we're putting on it, yeah. not funder given, okay.
Like if you deposit it July 1, then yes.
Well, okay, I don't want to get into accounting here, but if a funder put a restriction on it, we couldn't spend it till next year, then it would be released next year. But if it's our own self-imposed restriction on the 44K, then that's a little trickier. So, okay, all right. Anyway, yeah. Thanks, Catherine, sorry.
That's okay. Next slide. So this is just, again, a couple of other data points that I thought might be interesting. So that for this in FY21, we saw 670 total donors. We had this information I thought was really interesting. We had 55% of our donors were repeat donors, but then we had 45% as new donors. So that indicates a lot of great work that was done this year intentionally around trying to target a certain segments, as well as just the reach that we had in both of our special events. I saw people coming out of the woodwork and just grandparents coming from all over the place and former faculty members and just a lot of new donors that we were able to track and now are considered donors that will be approached appropriately next year and for years to come. Also interesting to note that the gift range out of the 670 total donors, that there were more gifts, and I can actually follow up and include how many gifts we received, which I think was probably more around like the 1,000 range. But we saw a range of $5.15 to $75,000. And the reason why I put this in here is because I really want to drive this message home that there are, every donor is due to the capacity of the department as well as the resources in the department, we can only do so much. However, every single relationship requires management. And I've always tried to approach every single relationship equitably in terms of everybody, you know, customer service is at the forefront of all of it. But every single range within the donor base requires a different strategic approach based on many various factors. But I'm just happy to see that we saw an increase of the total donors from last year. Last year was also kind of a crazy year, so maybe we should look back to the year before that. We did see 52% family participation this year, which is not ideal. It's great, and I want to thank everybody here tonight who has made a contribution. That's excellent, and we need you, and we need you to keep giving for years to come. However, I think we can do better. In fact, I know we can do better. The best year that we had was in 17-18, where we saw 68% family participation. So in response to this, we did do an additional mailer to the 48% of our families and other individuals who had given last year, but we hadn't seen anything come in yet. We did do one last mailer. We put it in the mail about a week and a half ago, and we are starting to see some return from that. So hopefully we will get beyond that $900,000. So a couple final notes here too, just what we are working on currently right now that is of most importance is it's kind of twofold. I'll just address these last two points together. One is we're putting together a fund development plan for FY22. I'm working closely with Josefina as well as the advancement committee, Stephen, Lisa, to at least get a draft to them by next week, and then have some very deliberate and serious strategic conversations around how we can not only reach that $1 million mark that has been identified for the gap next year, but increase it. There needs to be some very specific work, and I need to be very clear about this, that there are some high-level donors who we know will not come back next year. And that's not because they don't love OSA. It's not because they're not into the arts or charter schools. It's because they've termed out for whatever reason. And that's been communicated to us. Or sometimes it was a one-time donation. We will see that with one $50,000 gift. So the work that needs to happen there, which we are doing right now, is we are working with some consultants on a very short-term basis to help us identify some new prospects and to help us look in areas where we may not have looked before. And that requires a much bigger conversation around how we actually package the budget for next year. So for example, we see new opportunities, not only around JEDI, but also around CTE. There's amazing work happening with CTE that I definitely feel that we can secure new funds with. But all of this work needs to happen before, and this is what went into the budget for this year. This is how we were able to set that mark at $800,000. And exceed it. So I just want to make that very clear. There's a lot of intentional and strategic work going on behind the scenes in order for us to feel confident about that number going forward, as well as the ever increasing numbers that we will see in years to come. One other thing that's happening concurrently is that there are some shifts in the Department of Advancement. One of which is we have two positions open right now, and one is the Assistant Director of Advancement. The other is the Director of Advancement. And I just want to quickly acknowledge that Lisa intentionally did not put my name on the slide in the beginning that you all saw. And I just want to say thank you, Lisa. She actually, she and Josefina both separately recommended and suggested that I take this moment to share the news with the community. And I just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you to everyone. This is actually makes me very nervous to share this. Because in doing this job and being in development for the 9 years that I've been at OSA, I've always been behind the scenes. It's never really been about me. It's been about the students and it's been about the organization. And I brought my whole self to this job and am beyond grateful for the opportunity for this experience. I am honored to have participated in bringing close to $11 million to this organization. And I feel so solid and so proud of what this organization offers that that is the one thing that I will miss the most, is just being surrounded by the actual education that is happening at that school. And what we are giving these kids is incredible. And I will go down fighting for this for as long as I am here. So, I just want to acknowledge that. I simply just would not be who I am without OSA, and I want to say thank you. There's so much more that I wish I could have done in my time here, but again, I am beyond humble and proud of what together we have achieved. So with that, I want to just make everybody feel comfortable in the fact that I am working closely with Josefina and Lisa in a very coherent and comprehensive transition plan. A few of the deliverables that we will have prepared before my departure, which is set now at June 3rd, will be not only an FY22 fund development plan, but a 2 to 3 year plan for the advancement department, as well as for the school, which will be embedded into the strategic plan. We will also host a few meetings, which you'll hear. We'll put an announcement out to the community, but I would love to meet with the board, the APT as well, and senior administration and some key faculty members, as well as the community. I am committed to staying here, even though my last day is June 30th. I am committed to making sure that this is a smooth and very easy and successful transition for the school. So thank you.
Well, let me be the first to say thank you publicly, Catherine, to you for all of your hard work over the many, many years, all of your contributions and the care in which you have done the very challenging development work. So thank you very much. I want to, and also best wishes to you on your professional trajectory and, you know, all of the your new adventure you have ahead of you. So let me open it up for public comment, and then we'll take board questions, and then we will try to accelerate this because we do need to get to our closed session. So public comment. I don't see any public comment. I would please, Karen?
Marfin, yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Karen.
Hi, I just wanna say to Catherine, you know, I'm so sad to see you leave. It was such a blessing having worked with you this year. And really that exceeding the goal, you were a major contributor to that additional funds. So I really want to thank you for that. And now to the board and administration, I just want to emphasize what a beautiful job Catherine did this year with the virtual fundraisings that we had. I think those were very successful. So as we go back to school and we kind of go back to in-person events, I highly suggest that we keep those virtual events because not only they were more accessible, but they were also more reachable to a wider audience, extended family members that are not local. And although we can send an email and say, you know, please donate to my school, when they're part of a virtual event, they feel more engaged and more willing to donate than if we had it in person and these people were not able to attend or just send a brochure. So I would really encourage the board to consider keeping these virtual events, given that they were some of the most successful events that we've had, in addition to the in-person events that we hopefully be able to have. And please let us know how the community can help with both efforts. And again, thank you, Catherine, and wish you luck in your future endeavors. I know you're gonna be doing well wherever you go. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you. I don't see any other public comment, so we'll go ahead and open it up to the board members. Mike?
Well, Catherine, I know how much you love speaking in public. I know it's been a journey. You've gotten really, really good at it. So congratulations. And I just want to point out, I want to thank you immensely and also point out to the board that the total amount Catherine's raised is equal to the annual operating budget of an 820 kid school, $11 million. So thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
I'm just catching up to the program. Catherine is leaving?
Yes, Catherine just announced that she is leaving.
So is someone going to talk her out of it?
Sales mode, go, Jonathan.
You got here just in time.
Catherine, look, we've known each other a long time. And earlier I pointed out that we've always projected a budget that's going to be a deficit, and then somehow it's not a deficit at the end of the year. And I recognize that you had a hand in making sure that that was the case. So thank you for that. I'm sorry to hear you're leaving. And I think you did an amazing job this year. And hopefully Lisa is talking you out of it. Not my job to do that, but hopefully Lisa is talking you out of it. But if she fails at talking you out of it, wish you the very best.
Thank you.
And Steve, I think you wanted to get in.
Yeah, I'll be very brief because I'll be talking to Catherine separately, but just wanted to say publicly, thank you. I've worked with Catherine for 7 years, seeing tremendous growth in her, and really appreciate everything you've done and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Any other board comment?
Yeah, I would like to just say that I've really appreciated your enthusiasm about everything that you do and try and strive for with our fundraising and all the different, you know, ways that you've been out there. You know, we're just really sharing how great this school is and being able to turn that into, you know, resources for our kids. So I really have enjoyed working with you, and especially over the last couple of years where I feel like you've really, you know, reached out and explained your program to the families in a way that's been, you know, I think super educational for me, and I'm sure for a lot of other folks, and it's been great to have you as part of our team.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, Catherine, thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you to all of the staff who joined us at the open part of the meeting for the various presentations. It's really appreciated. We're going to go ahead and transition now to our closed session. Thank you, everybody, for hanging around. We're almost done. We need to do a roll call as we're back in the full session. So let's start with Adrian.
Here.
Thank you. Mike?
Here.
Thank you. Steve?
Can you guys hear me now?
Here.
That's weird. We can.
Wiling?
Yes, here.
Thank you. Jason?
Here.
Dwayne?
Here.
Okay, and I am here. So there's no action to report out from closed session. Thank you, everybody, for participating in the meeting, and we'll see you all next time.
Good night.
Jonathan, I was going to say, if you just learned.